of expectation, the pressure of perfection, and the quest for more. More money, more power, more prestige. It was part of why I'd founded my company, Guardian. I was looking for a way to do business that enabled me to help people while still succeeding. I'd needed to prove to myself that it was possible, that you didn't have to tear others down to get ahead. Pain flashed across Ellie's features.
Sorry, Con-Con, I know. I miss you.
Fuck. Tell you what, how about after the wedding and honeymoon craziness, we do a sibling trip, just the two of us? She grinned at the screen, her eyes lighting.
You going to take me to Disney World like I always wanted?
I laughed. I think I'll pass on endless lines and rides that are bound to make me hurl.
You always did have a sensitive stomach.
I shook my head and scrubbed a hand over my stubbled cheek. You really show no mercy.
That's what little sisters are for.
So glad the stork dropped you on our doorstep. Ellie flipped her hair over her shoulder in an exaggerated motion.
As you should be.
The video cut out for a second.
Sorry, that's Bradley. I need to jump. Love you, Con-Con.
Love you too, Elbel. And then she was gone. I stared at the screen for a long time. The background image was the same one the phone had come with. No photos of a wife or kids to personalize the device. Not even a damn dog. As I stared at the endless array of apps, a sense of loneliness settled over me as if I had some gaping hole in my chest that would always be empty. But it was more. There was a sense of true fear. Because the person I loved most was diving deeper into the shark-infested waters, and I worried she'd never get out. I shoved to my feet, locking my phone and stalking inside. I made my way to the guest room Cope had given me and quickly changed into swim trunks. Grabbing my goggles, I went straight for the pool, diving in with no pretense or easing into it. The cold water was a shock to the system, but it would be when I hadn't bothered with the heat. I welcomed the brutality of it and gave as good as I got, attacking the water as I swam, back and forth, lap after lap. When my muscles burned, I kept right on pushing, until I saw a pair of feet dangling beneath the surface at the far end. The toes were decorated with a dark purple polish, and some part of me just knew who they belonged to. When I reached the end, I popped up and tore off my goggles. Arden stared back at me, not a care in the world.
You done doing battle with the devil?
9. Arden. I'd hovered on the stone patio around the pool for too long, simply gazing at the man in the water. No, the beast. He was warring with his demons, and I couldn't stop watching, like some kind of stalker. When I slipped my feet into the water and felt how cold it was, I knew he had to be truly tortured to put up with those temperatures. But studying him now, his bare chest heaving and muscles and tattoos on display, I knew he didn't feel it. Not one bit. Water slid down the planes of his chest, and my fingers itched to trace each droplet. But more than that, his tattoos. The ink was a work of art. Thorny vines, not unlike the ones in my painting, curved over Link's sides and up his chest. One pack had the word truth, the other trust. The combination packed a punch. And the fact that it lined defined muscle with a dusting of dark hair only made the effect headier. Dumb, dumb, dumb. I was not going there. Link stared up at me, those gold-flecked green eyes still the slightest bit stormy.
What are you doing here?
Wasn't that the million-dollar question? I fought the urge to squirm on the pool's edge. With my luck, I'd end up tumbling right into the water. Instead, I lifted my chin, defiance sliding through me. I live here. What's your excuse, cowboy? His lips twitched, the scruff coating his cheeks and jaw moving with the motion.
I live here too.
Temporarily, I shot back. Link chuckled, and the sound was just like the man. Surprising. It was all warmth, coated in grit. The kind of sound that had all my nerve endings waking up.
Fair enough.
His gaze roamed over me like the feather light caress of fingertips.
What do you have there?
He asked, inclining his head toward the white bag next to me. I instantly regretted my decision to search Link out, to make sure he was okay, but I couldn't change my tack now. The best chicken pesto sandwich ever created? Link arched a brow.
That's a bold claim.
I know how to back it up.
Seems kind of cruel to brag about the best chicken pesto sandwich ever created when I just swam for a good hour and am starving.
I brought you one. Ah, dumb. I should have left Link to his demons. He was obviously doing just fine in the world. But I was a sucker for shadows, and he had them in spades. A smile spread across Link's face. No, a grin, and a cocky one at that.
You brought me dinner.
I kicked water at him. Don't get too excited. It's an apology for being a bitch the other day. His grin fell.
Arden, the last thing you are is a bitch. I got pushy. It wasn't cool.
I shook my head, strands of hair tickling my bare shoulders with the movement. You weren't. You asked for what you wanted. I could have said no in a nicer way. I plucked up a loose string from my jean shorts and twisted it around my finger, pulling it as tightly as I could. I'm not the best with new people. It takes me a little while to get used to them. I didn't hear him move, and I sure as hell wasn't looking at him, so I didn't see Link until he appeared right in front of me. My knees were just a breath from his chest. One slight shift, and I'd know what that skin felt like. Link's hands lifted out of the water. He gently took mine and slowly unwound the thread from my finger.
I think you're doing just fine, Arden.
I let out a scoff as my eyes lifted to his. Fine wasn't how I'd describe my people skills. But what did you expect when you'd been hidden away for most of your life? Nora had homeschooled me through middle school, and I'd tried our public high school for all of 2 weeks before begging her to let me take online classes. The story Nora gave people was that it was to give me more time with my art. People thought I was some sort of prodigy. In reality, I just jumped at every little thing. That had changed with Kai's arrival. He'd seen my timidness and asked if I wanted to learn how to protect myself. Nora had been skeptical at first, but when she saw my confidence growing, she'd ordered us gym mats for the basement. But as much as training in jiu-jitsu had helped me no longer be fearful, I still wasn't crazy about crowds or new people. It felt like I didn't have the full set of instructions on social cues. Link released my hand, and I instantly missed the contact. People didn't touch me very often. Something about my awkwardness made them think I didn't like it. And I often found myself missing the casual affection of a hug or the squeeze of my hand. But Link's fingers, they were so much more. I could still feel the rough pads and how they dragged over my skin, leaving a warm trail behind.
You say what you mean, what you need. There's not a damn thing wrong with that.
Link said, his voice lowering to a growly tenor. Maybe. I muttered. Do you want a sandwich or not? One corner of Link's mouth pulled up.
Tell me the truth. Is it poisoned?
I flipped him off and lifted my feet out of the water. I'll just take it back to my house. Don't think I can't eat both, or Brutus will help me. Link's gaze flicked to the grass where Brutus lay, soaking up the last bits of sun for the day.
Brutus would never eat my sandwich.
I scoffed at that, but the sound got lodged in my throat as Link hoisted himself out of the water. Broad, tanned shoulders flexed as his biceps tightened, the inked designs dancing. My mouth went dry as I took in the wall of abs. I was so totally screwed. Link grabbed a towel and wrapped it around his shoulders, disrupting my view.
I'll risk poisoning for the best chicken pesto sandwich ever created.
I cleared my throat. It's worth death.
I'll be the judge of that.
Link sat on the edge of the pool, his feet gliding through the water as he did. He was close, but not too close, seeming to respect that little hint of truth I'd given him. that I struggled with new people. New anything, honestly, but he didn't need to know that. I slid my feet back into the water and opened the bag. I pushed one wrapped sandwich over to Link and grabbed the other for myself. I didn't know what kind of soda you drink, so I just got you a Coke. He took the drink nearest him.
Coke's good. Dr. Pepper would have been even better.
I wrinkled my nose. Seriously, you like the taste of 82 different drinks in one?
You don't know what you're missing. It's delicious.
He argued. I made a gagging noise and Link laughed as he unwrapped his sandwich.
The moment of truth.
He took a bite and then closed his eyes, groaning as he chewed.
This might just be heaven in a sandwich.
Told you. I didn't bite into mine because I was too busy staring at Link and chewing his. The pure pleasure on his face took root somewhere deep inside me. Finally, his eyes opened.
Thank you.
I struggled to swallow. It's nothing.
No, it's not. I had a shit day, and you made it a hell of a lot better.
I studied him for a long moment. I wanted to ask what had made it such a bad day, but I couldn't. Not when I wouldn't answer questions in the same vein. So I opted for something else. This is how you work out what's bothering you? He lifted his chin in the affirmative.
Hell of a lot healthier than some of the alternatives.
I unwrapped my sandwich, staring down at the perfectly toasted bread. You're not wrong there. I felt Link's gaze on my face as I bit into my sandwich, but I refused to turn, letting him know I was that attuned to his attention.
Is that why you trained with Kai?
Link asked finally. No.
Please, stop talking. It's too much.
I broke off a piece of bread and threw it at him. I like to know how to protect myself. We were edging in on the danger zone, but I couldn't help it. I wanted to give Link the answers he wanted, the ones he seemed to need.
You're obviously good at it.
Not as good as you. Link shrugged, the towel shifting with the movement and revealing a bit more of the tan skin below.
I've been training for a long time. Been lucky to work with some pretty incredible teachers.
Those billions come in handy sometimes.
Sometimes.
He echoed, his gaze moving to mine.
How do you deal with your demons?
My heart hammered against my ribs. My art. It's always how I've gotten out what I need to.
And it's why you don't do commissions,
he surmised. I nodded. It's always been such a personal process, the medium, the vision, all of it. I put a piece of my soul into every single creation. I can't control that. I wouldn't want to. Link stared at me for a moment, not speaking.
It needs to be wild, just like you.
Those words hit, every single one. But they managed to be a caress, too. A balm. Yes, I whispered.
Well, they're incredible. After Cope showed me a picture of one of the pieces in his house, I'm pretty sure I scoured the internet for every piece I could find. There was a fair amount about your work, but not so much about the creator behind it.
My ribs constricted, making it hard to breathe.
Kind of surprising, given some of the exhibits you've had.
I don't like the spotlight. I croaked, trying to keep my breaths even and measured.
Fair enough.
Link's eyes were on me again, but this time panic took hold. I'd taken a risk sitting here with him, answering questions I shouldn't have, letting him peek behind the curtain. I stood quickly, gathering up my sandwich. I need to go. I was already moving as Link called my name, slipping my feet into flip-flops and making a beeline for my guest house, whistling for Brutus as I went. I heard Link call for me again, but it was too late in so many ways. I was already gone, and it was better that way.
10. Lincoln. The urge to run after her was strong. So damn strong, it took everything I had to keep myself in place, feet in the freezing water, sandwich on my lap. Arden had left her drink behind. That would be the perfect excuse. I could bring it to her guest house or studio. But I knew she wouldn't welcome me there. I mulled over the events of the past 20 minutes. What had sent her running? I played back snippets of our conversation. We'd been talking about her art when she stiffened, her spine going ramrod straight. I frowned at that. Maybe it was simply because she'd shared a little of what happened behind the curtain, what inspired her art. The conversation and Arden's reaction swirled round and round in my brain, and then everything stilled. I'd said I had looked up everything I could find about her. I was moving before I'd even consciously given my body the order. I wrapped up my sandwich and grabbed both drinks. I wanted to go straight to Cope's office, the one he'd let me take over for the duration of my stay, but I knew he wouldn't be pleased with me if I ruined his desk chair with wet swim trunks. No longer hungry, I ditched the food in the kitchen and went straight for my room. I made quick work of grabbing a shower and changing into some joggers and a tee, then headed right for the office. My fingers itched to be at the keyboard, figuring out what the hell had Arden so damn spooked. I slid behind the desk and flipped open my laptop. I ignored the staggering number of emails in my inbox and opened a search engine. I typed in her name, Arden Waverly. It was interesting to me that some of Cope's siblings had taken the Coulson last name and others hadn't. I was sure that was a complicated thing to contend with. Whether or not to change a fundamental part of yourself. It fit that Arden hadn't. She seemed to set herself apart from her siblings. From everyone, really. A few dozen search results popped up, all having to do with Arden's art. There was her website and another local site I'd seen before but hadn't dove into, called The Collective. I clicked on that link. The homepage was artfully done, and the site read, A Home for the Arts in Sparrow Falls, where all are welcome. Something about those words hit. They landed in a way that made me long for that kind of sense of belonging. There were countless photos of gallery showings and classes, even what looked like a mural project in downtown Sparrow Falls. I clicked on the tab that read Artists in Residence. There were four. Hannah Farley, Isaiah Reynolds, Arden Waverly, and Farrah Whitman. It looked like they all showed there, and some had studio space at the Collective as well. It looked like an amazing community center of sorts, but one specializing in art. A banner on the site caught my eye. Save the Date, a fundraiser for youth programming at the Collective. I clicked on that next. It looked like they were planning a show and auction to raise money for expanding their programming for young artists. I quickly typed the date into my phone and made a mental note to stop by the gallery and check it out. Exiting out of the Collective's homepage, I moved on to the next hit. There was article after article about Arden's creations, but they were all eerily similar. None had a photo of her or even an interview. They called her a reclusive artist who refused every interview request. I went through about 24 of the same sorts of articles before my eyes started to burn. I leaned back in my chair and glared at the screen. It wasn't as if Arden had Banksy-level fame, but her art was getting picked up by bigger and bigger galleries, even some important collectors. I recognized the names from my mom's involvement with the art world. Just thinking it had a burn flaring in my sternum. She would have loved Arden, her talent and her fire. But Arden's art wouldn't give me the answers I needed. I tried to think back to what Cope had shared about his siblings over the years. He'd walked me through how they'd all come to be with the Coulsons. He and Fallon by birth, Shep by adoption, and Rhodes, Arden, Kai, and Trace through fostering. I knew Arden had come to live with them at a fairly young age. 12. I was almost positive that was how old she'd been. I plugged in new search parameters, setting the years to a few before and after that 12-year mark. Endless results popped up, but none of them were my Arden. Mine. It was such a ridiculous thought. She could barely spend 15 minutes with me. I combed through the search results a second time. Nothing. I tried slightly different terms. Still nothing. Finally, I broadened the search window and found an article in the Sparrow Falls Gazette, Art Show by Local Youth Phenom. I clicked it, quickly reading the piece. It talked about the local gallery that was putting on a show for 15-year-old Arden Waverly. But again, there was no picture, no interview, and barely any identifying information about her. I sank against the leather chair. Nothing. There was absolutely nothing about Arden Waverly before this article. She was a ghost. And that begged one question. Why had she needed to disappear?
11. Arden. My truck's engine purred as I slid to a stop at one of the three traffic lights in Sparrow Falls. I remembered Boston traffic. Not well, but it was there in the recesses of my mind. How my dad would complain about getting stuck in it for hours on his way into and out of the city. And now I complained when there were three cars in front of me. I liked the simplicity of life here, the way no one seemed to be in too big of a rush. My gaze flicked to a man walking down the street, a camera around his neck. He wasn't familiar. My brain automatically tried to place him, attempting to flip through memories to see if he was someone who'd tried to hurt me. Or worse. I was constantly playing that game. It got harder during the summer months with the influx of tourists. Instead of recognizing a good 75% of folks in town, it went down to 50 at best. And I was left assessing every new face I came across. The only problem was that the man who'd pulled all the strings was still a faceless ghost. Only his voice haunted my nightmares. A short honk sounded behind me, and Brutus let out a grumble of annoyance. It was the polite version of honking, because the light had most definitely changed. I eased off the brake, giving Mrs. Peterson behind me a wave of apology. My stomach twisted. Just one more thing to add to the pile of evidence that my brain was a messed up place, always playing tricks on me. It was the same reason I'd bolted from having sandwiches with Link like a scared doe. The twisting sensation shifted to annoyance, and then anger. That wasn't me. I didn't run away. Not since that night, almost 14 years ago. That was the point of the endless training with Kai, the reason I had Brutus so I didn't have to be afraid. I drove past Sutton's Bakery, the mix-up, and my stomach rumbled. I'd be stopping there on the way home, even if it would feel a little bittersweet now that she and Luca were in Seattle with Cope. I passed the Pop on my right and made a plan to get a burger tomorrow. It was good to know what food was coming next. Just before I reached the edge of town, I flipped on my blinker and turned left. The Collective was set back two blocks from Cascade Avenue, but it was still close enough for tourists to meander into the gallery. And that two-block distance from the main street meant it had been a hell of a lot more affordable, even for such a large space. And we needed large. A gallery space with plenty of natural light, studio space for the artists, studio space for classes, and I had a vision for making it even larger, but we needed an influx of cash first. I was fine funding the lion's share of it from my arts proceeds, but to be sustainable on a larger community-wide scale, we needed more donations than I could provide. I just hoped the fundraiser was the start of that. As I turned onto the side street, I saw that most of the parking spots were already full. Tourists. I hoped like hell they were at least purchasing some things from the gallery to offset my parking issues. I fist-pumped to the drumbeat of the song blaring from my speakers as I spotted someone pulling out of a spot up ahead. I quickly snagged it and hopped out of my truck. Turning to face Brutus, I held up the leash. "You know the rules, buddy." His head dropped as he gave me a disdainful look. "I'm sorry, but you know Trace will write both our asses a ticket if we don't follow the rules." As if I'd summoned my siblings by words alone, my phone buzzed in my pocket. "Kai has changed the group name to We Know What You Did. Kai."
Spoiler alert, not only did Arden almost slice Link's carotid, she also threatened to have Brutus rip off his hand.
I scowled at the screen. "Fallon. Do we need to go over those play nice with others lessons again? Jesus. My siblings would never lay off me now. I was going to kill Kai. Kai."
"Oh, she wants to play real nice with Linky Link, especially when he's sparring shirtless."
"Oh, hell. A flurry of texts appeared all at once. Shep.
Is he making you uncomfortable, Arden?
Trace.
Do you need me to talk to him? Explain things?
Cope.
I'm going to kill him.
I opened the camera app, took a picture of myself flipping the bird, and sent it to the group chat. Me. That was for Kyler, and Kyler alone. Rhodes. Shit, she formal named you, duck and cover. Me. For the rest of my 82 million big brothers, I can take care of myself. Big dog, brown belt in jiu-jitsu, always has a knife or taser. Remember? I didn't wait for an answer. I simply flicked the phone to silent and shoved it into my pocket. I could hear Trace's warnings about a silent phone being a security risk ringing in my ears, but I didn't care. I'd left WITSEC at 18 for a reason. To live. But I wasn't sure I'd actually done that. It was time. Squaring my shoulders, I lifted Brutus's leash and motioned for him to hop down. He did as I instructed, but sent me baleful eyes as I hooked the clip to his collar. I know, buddy, I said, giving him a pat. I'll give you some turkey when we get home. That had his tail wagging and booty shaking. Turkey and hamburgers were his favorite. Wrapping his leash around my hand, I headed for the collective. Brutus was great in town, happy to be at ease with new things to sniff and people to see. Unless someone made a move on me, he would behave just like every other happy-go-lucky pet. But some people gave him a wide berth anyway. I got it. He was massive, but he was also the sweetest dog you'd ever meet. As we walked up to the collective, I frowned and checked my watch. It was 2 minutes before noon, but there wasn't a soul inside. Annoyance flickered when I opened the door and called out, Denver! No answer. Apparently, I was rocking a murder list today. First Kai, now Denver for leaving the gallery unlocked and unattended. I moved through the space, checking the walls and spaces for sculptures. Everything seemed to be in place. I saw Hannah's beautiful and delicate watercolor landscapes, Farah's brightly colored mixed media masterpieces, and Isaiah's earthy and sultry sculptures, plus my pieces. Mine were a mix of mediums, oils, pastels, charcoal, acrylics, metal, and the occasional clay piece. But one thing tied it all together. Darkness. For the first time in a long while, that had me shifting uncomfortably. I'd come to terms with my battle with the darkness, feeling like my art was an honest expression of the human condition. Now I wondered if I was missing something. The bell over the door jingled as it opened, and I whirled, suddenly feeling naked at the flash of self-doubt I'd felt. A tall, muscular man just shy of a decade older than me strolled into the collective, his black hair shaved on the sides but done in twists on top. He grinned, his white teeth flashing against his dark skin.
Arty!
It was the mischievousness in the nickname that had me fighting a grin. Isaiah, I greeted. He moved into my space, not worrying about Brutus at all. He bent to hug me, kissing both of my cheeks.
I missed you like crazy. Why are you always breaking my heart?
I snorted as he released me. I doubt you'll be heartbroken for long. He was too gorgeous, talented, and charming for that. Isaiah's grin widened.
You know I don't like the silence.
Or an empty bed, I muttered.
You know me too well.
The bell rang again as Hannah walked in, looking flustered. Her red hair was piled in a wild bun atop her head, and she wore a sundress with spaghetti straps adorned in wildflowers. Arden, hey, we weren't sure if you were coming. Guilt churned. I'd been in art and family world lately, and not all that present at the collective. I made it. Where's Denver? I want to ream his ass out for leaving the gallery unlocked while no one was here. A scoff sounded as someone walked in from the area of the back door. Farah's lips twisted in a wry grin as she entered, her black hair cut in an angled bob and dressed in her usual artist's black. How the newest member of our crew had ended up in Sparrow Falls was beyond me, but I adored her angry honesty.
He's off passing out flyers for the fundraiser and kissing some reporter's ass.
Farah mumbled, dropping a stack of flyers onto the desk in the corner. My mouth went dry. Did you say reporter? The bell jingled yet again as Denver entered, a man with salt-and-pepper hair next to him. Denver instantly winced.
Hey, Arden.
I scowled at him. Something you want to tell me? Denver's throat worked as he swallowed.
Yeah, it just all happened so fast. Sam Levine is a reporter for Aesthetica. He's doing a big piece on community art programs. Came all the way from New York.
I didn't miss how Denver had stressed all the way, as if warning me not to be an ass. There weren't that many print art publications, and Aesthetica was the best of the best. If he wrote a piece about our community program, it could be huge for us. But it could also put me in the crosshairs. Again. 12. Arden. I looked from Denver to the reporter, trying to figure out how to play this. Brutus sensed my unease and pushed against my side, assuring me that he was there and asking if I needed him. I scratched him behind the ears, trying to reassure him, but it did nothing to settle me. My gaze swept over Sam Levine. He looked like the quintessential reporter in his mid-40s, black-framed glasses, a scruffy, slightly unkempt look, as if he'd been staying up way too late to finish a story and existed on coffee alone. But I knew looks could be deceiving. The man who'd killed my parents looked as if he could have been seated next to us at the country club. "Did Denver tell you that I don't do interviews or photos?" I asked. The man pushed his glasses up the bridge of his nose.
"I'm aware of your media aversion, Ms. Waverly."
Isaiah snickered.
"Dude, don't call her that. She'll put you on your ass."
The reporter's eyes widened a fraction.
"What do you like to be called?"
"Arden. Call me Arden." The name tasted sour on my tongue because it felt like a lie. Even though it was exactly who I was now, it wasn't who I'd been. But I sure as hell didn't feel like a Sheridan either. Sometimes I felt like no one at all.
"All right, Arden, why don't I put you on background? Nothing you say will be quoted, and I'll make sure you aren't in any photos,"
Sam said. He was being kind, more accepting than most reporters I came across, but I still couldn't help the unease and anxiety. But then I thought back to my promise to myself, to live. And living meant doing things that made me happy, like working with kids in our art program and knowing we gave them a safe place to land whenever they needed it. My back teeth ground together as my gaze flicked to Denver. I saw pleading in his brown eyes, even if this was partly so he could get his ego stroked. I also knew he was doing it because he cared, because he wanted the program to succeed. "Okay," I muttered. Denver rocked to the balls of his feet and clapped his hands, making countless turquoise bracelets rattle in the process. He and Lolly could go shopping together. She just went for the more bedazzled versions of his attire.
"Thank you, thank you, thank you!"
Denver hurried over to me to give me a hug, but came up short at Brutus's low growl.
I'll just thank you from over here."
I patted Brutus's head. "Freund, Brutus, Freund." The growling instantly eased.
"Your dog speaks German?"
Sam asked, his gray brows lifting. Shit. This was why I didn't like reporters being around. I didn't need any information about my dog getting out. "His trainer was German," I lied. But old Sam would probably get even more suspicious if he knew these dogs were trained in a variety of foreign languages to keep most people from understanding their commands. I sent Denver a pointed look, but it was Isaiah who rescued me.
"Sam, why don't I walk you out? I know you have that interview with one of the families with kids in the after-school program." "I'd love to stay for your meeting,"
Sam began.
"Hear about your fundraising efforts. Then next time,"
Isaiah promised. A time when I would be conveniently absent. The moment Sam disappeared from sight, I whirled on Denver. "Seriously?" His cheeks reddened.
"What's the big deal?"
"The big deal?" I asked, my frustration rising. "I told you flat out that I didn't want to do any interviews, and you just go behind my back and ambush me?"
"Sam is here to write about the program, not you,"
Denver huffed. "Den," Farrah said, her voice completely deadpan.
"You know, you were hoping she would cave under pressure, and that shit isn't cool."
"Farrah has a point,"
Isaiah agreed, crossing back through the space. The red on Denver's cheeks deepened.
I'm just trying to make this fundraiser a success.
And it will be, I argued.
But think about how much bigger it could be if we got national attention.
Denver pressed. My palms started to sweat. It was always an invisible equation. How much attention on my art was okay? How much was too much? I'd turned down shows at some top galleries because they required me to be in attendance for the openings. It felt like giving away pieces of a dream in the quest for safety. Not that stuffy parties were my thing, but they might have been worth it. Denver's just trying to help, Hannah said softly. She hated when we fought, and artists could have fiery tempers. All I'm asking is that you give me a heads up, I said, pinning Denver with a hard stare. He squeezed the back of his neck and sighed.
I'm sorry, I should have warned you so you could have avoided him.
Thank you. I bent and unhooked Brutus's leash since we were inside. We should see about setting up a phone bank for the auction. That way people who aren't local can bid. Might come in handy if we get national attention. Denver stared at me for one beat, then two, before a huge grin spread across his face.
Think we could get in with that Upper East Side socialite crew?
I tried not to let that one land. How many times have my parents talked about the new pieces of art they'd bought, or ones they had their eyes on? Art purchased with money that had cost them their lives? And for what? Farah blinked at Denver a few times.
Upper East Side socialite crew? What are you, Gossip Girl?
The two of them devolved into bickering, like siblings, but Isaiah moved to my side, bumping my shoulder with his.
You okay? I can throw a fit and refuse to let any reporters be in your presence if it will help.
I chuckled. Thank you, but I'm okay. And it'll be good for the auction to get some attention.
As long as you're sure.
I'm sure. I glanced down at my watch. Come on, let's get the show on the road. I have a tomato and burrata panini from the mix-up calling my name. Farah smirked.
When isn't a panini calling your name?
Never, I shot back, because I'm smart. We all grabbed seats that Denver must have set out earlier and began working our way through tasks. Music, staffing, the phone bank, show layout, and finally, food.
I volunteer Arden as tribute, Farah said. She's obviously very food-motivated.
I flipped her off. I'm happy to tackle that. I can talk to Sutton and see if her crew at the mix-up would be willing to cater. I do love those devil's food cupcakes, Hannah said dreamily.
Gotta find me a woman who looks at me like Hannah looks at devil's food,
Isaiah muttered. She flushed instantly and ducked her head. Hannah was the youngest of all of us at 23 and easily scandalized by Isaiah's comments. Chocolate over men, every single time, I muttered. As if I'd tempted fate, the bell over the door jingled and a man stepped inside. But not just any man, one with dark hair and hazel eyes, whose broad shoulders and muscular chest were practically on display in the pale gray t-shirt he wore the hell out of. Why are you stalking me, cowboy? I growled.
He can stalk me anytime he wants, Farah mumbled as Hannah choked on a laugh.
I shot Farah a glare. And what would your boyfriend say about that? She waggled her eyebrows at me.
Welcome to the bedroom?
Link chuckled.
Thanks, I think.
Brutus, the traitor, jogged right over to him, tail wagging. Link crouched to greet him with rubs and scratches. Brutus licked his cheek and Link laughed. The sound so damn beautiful.
Holy hell, I'd lick him too, Farah muttered.
Hey,
Isaiah snapped, affronted. She leaned over and patted his cheek.
Don't worry, you're still my favorite nude model.
That's a little better,
Isaiah huffed. I pushed to my feet and crossed to Link and my traitorous pup. What are you doing here? He looked up at me through lashes that were too gorgeous for his own good and only seemed to accentuate the deep green in his hazel eyes.
Haven't you heard? I'm building a house.
So? I ground out.
So? I'm going to need art for that house. Thought it would be nice to have some of it be local. Someone told me this was the place to find it.
Link's gaze flicked behind me, hardening a fraction as he pushed to his feet. Billionaires, I muttered. Then I felt it, heat at my back. I glanced over my shoulder and saw Denver standing far too close. He extended a hand to Link, his arm brushing mine in the process.
Hello, I'm Denver Wick, manager of the Collective. I'd be happy to show you around and suggest some pieces. Lincoln Pierce, thanks for the offer, but I'd just like to wander and see what grabs hold.
His gaze flicked to me and held for just a beat too long. And in that beat, my skin heated and my nipples pebbled, lips parting just slightly with my sharp intake of breath. It was official. My body was an idiot. Link's gaze zeroed in on my mouth, registering my quick inhale, and his hazel eyes flashed a bit more gold.
Maybe you can tell me about the artists, Vicious.
If you don't, I will, Farah called from our meeting spot.
Heat flashed somewhere deep and felt alarmingly like jealousy. I knew Farah was joking. She was happily coupled up with a local mechanic. But I still didn't like the idea of her being the one to show Link around, to be close enough to smell his cedar and bourbon scent. We're in the middle of switching over displays, so we only have a few pieces up at the moment, I said, hoping Link would simply go. That would be easier, less complicated. But even just thinking that was a lie. Link's gaze didn't move from my face, as if reading every thought that passed through my head.
It'll still give me a chance to get a feel for the artists, don't you think?
Sure, I grumbled.
We need to finish our meeting,
Denver said, his voice tight. I glanced at my manager, taking in the tightness around his eyes. He'd normally be jumping at the chance to gain a rich patron.
Why don't you just piss a circle around her? Farah called. Might save us some time.
Denver's eyes flared, the brown color lightening to almost amber.
I'm just pointing out that we weren't finished. We still need to figure out who's handling the music for the fundraiser.
Isaiah pushed to his feet, saving me yet again.
That's all me, boss man.
His gaze flicked to me, a mischievous smile playing on his lips.
Lord knows we can't put Artie in charge of that.
A chuckle sounded behind me.
As someone planning on attending that fundraiser, my ears thank you,
Link said. Isaiah barked out a laugh, then crossed to us and extended a hand.
I'm Isaiah. That wildflower queen with the red hair is Hannah, our resident watercolorist. That coffee black just like her heart dream is Farah. She does the mixed media pieces you'll see around here.
Link took Isaiah's hand, his expression warm.
You must do the clay work.
His head inclined to a sculpture in the corner.
Bold and damn captivating. Appreciate it,
Isaiah said, releasing his grip. Surprise lit through me. How did you know it wasn't one of mine? Link's gaze moved back to me. The focus made me want to squirm.
I know your art, know its style, what it makes me feel.
Farah reached for a few flyers from a stack and began fanning herself.
Good God, I need a cigarette.
My mouth went dry and the urge to reach for something to drink was so strong I only managed one word. Oh. Isaiah chuckled.
This is going to be so much fun.
I turned in his direction, pinning him with a glare that should have had him rethinking his words. He held up both hands but only laughed harder.
What did I say?
I'm leaving, I muttered, pulling my keys from my pocket. You guys have fun. Annoyance flickered through me, but I knew the emotion was a lie. It hid something else. Something that felt a lot like a mix of shame and hurt. I knew my people skills were more than a little lacking. The few relationships I'd had were more like short-lived encounters or situationships, and always with people who were temporary. An artist I'd met on a retreat in Sedona, a photographer in Sparrow Falls for a month shooting wildlife. They were never invited into my spaces. My walls remained firmly intact. It wasn't normal, but then again, nothing about me was. That had never bothered me before. Until now. I snapped my fingers, beckoning Brutus to follow me. He did instantly, reading my mood. I snapped his leash back on and was out the door and halfway down the walk before Link caught up with me. He didn't make a move to grab me or stop my forward progress. He simply matched my steps.
You okay?
I'm fine, I lied. Go back and look at the art. I'm sure any of them would be happy to show you around. My stomach twisted at the thought of any of them being the one to catch Link's eye. Getting close enough to bask in his light. Ugh, dumb.
I don't want any of them to show me around. I want to hear about the art from the woman who creates pieces that grab me by the throat and refuse to let go. Who creates work that haunts you long after you've looked away. Art that makes you confront the dark places inside.
I stumbled over nothing. His words were like beautiful punches. Link caught my elbow to steady me, and I looked up into his face, searching for some sort of deception. How could he know? How could he have plucked exactly what I wanted my art to do to people from my head? Okay. It was all I could get out, but it seemed enough for Link. He beamed like I'd just given him a puppy.
You name the time, and I'll be there.
After all the new pieces are in. But they're ones that are going in the auction, so you'd better have your checkbook ready if you want one. The grin on Link's face only widened.
I think I can handle that.
I let out a small scoff. Billionaires. Link barked out a laugh.
We're the worst.
I started walking again, Link following on one side while Brutus walked on the other. You said it, not me.
At least you know that when you take me for all I've got, it'll go to a good cause.
I couldn't help the smile tugging at my lips. At least he was being a good sport about it all. It is. The after-school and summer programs here give many kids a place to go when they need it. And an outlet for everything going on in their lives. I felt Link's gaze on my face, gently probing.
The way art is an outlet for you.
Fighting the urge to squirm, I tightened my grip on my keys, feeling the metal tines bite into my palm. If I can give even one kid the outlet that was given to me, it'll be worth it. I couldn't resist glancing up at Link, needing to know if he understood. His expression had softened, the green in his eyes paling just the slightest bit.
I bet you've given it to more than one, Arden.
Something about him saying my name made it feel like it fit me more, like it wasn't a lie. I hope so.
I know so.
Something about that felt too intimate. The feeling of Link understanding me was so overpowering, I needed some distance. When my truck came into view, I breathed a sigh of relief. I'll text you when all the pieces are in.
Sounds good,
Link said, not crowding me, as if he could read that I needed the space. I stepped off the curb and moved toward my driver's side door. One of the flyers for the auction and fundraiser had been tucked beneath my windshield wiper. I automatically grabbed it, but something caught my attention. A flash of red. There hadn't been any red on the flyers we'd created as a team. We'd designed the image as a mixture of all four of our art styles, with a headline in deep blue and the date, time, and location in green at the bottom. But this flyer had boxy red writing at the top. Angry slashes that had my breaths picking up speed and blood roaring in my ears. I know who you really are.
13. Lincoln. I couldn't stop staring at her. It was a problem. I was usually so much better at keeping my cards close to my chest and not revealing a damn thing, but I couldn't seem to do that with Arden. Something about her pulled honesty out of me, raw and real, no hiding. And I was addicted to the feeling, just like I was addicted to staring at her, watching how the breeze caught her dark brown hair, how the bright afternoon sun hit the apples of her cheeks, revealing those hints of freckles, the way her mouth curved in the most tempting way. And how she moved. It was just like her, bold, no holding back. She stepped off the curb and I knew I was going to lose her. She'd climb into her truck and disappear. I wanted to hold on to her for as long as I could, hold on to the way she made me feel, but I knew I had to let her go. It was the only way she'd come back to me. As she snatched the flyer off her windshield, my gaze stayed fixed on her, soaking up every movement. But then something changed. Her muscles tensed, and her hand began to tremble. The color drained from her normally tan face. Panic shot through me, and I was moving before the conscious thought entered my head. "What is it?" I barked. Arden trembled harder, but it was as if she didn't hear my voice. Brutus let out a low growl at her side, obviously reading his human's unease. I peered over her shoulder at the flyer she stared at so intently. Angry red letters had been scrawled across the top of it. "I know who you really are." "What the fuck?" I snarled. Arden still stared at the note, completely frozen, clearly terrified. What the hell was going on? I might not have the answer to that, but I had enough rage coursing through me that I wanted to end whoever had put this kind of fear into Arden. It took everything in me to gentle my tone. "Arden, I'm going to take the note, okay?" She didn't show any signs of reaction. I pulled the paper from her, careful to only touch the very corner. Arden simply stared at the spot where it had been. "Fuck. We need to get you into the truck. Can you help me?" I laid a hand on her shoulder, and Brutus let out another low growl. My back teeth ground together. I was damn glad Arden had him looking out for her, but I also didn't need him going for my jugular for trying to help. "Arden, I need you to tell Brutus it's okay if I help you." She blinked a couple of times, but didn't speak. "Tell him I'm a friend," I encouraged.
"Freund."
Arden's voice was more rasp than word, but Brutus eased a fraction. "That's it." My hand wrapped around hers, gently uncurling her fingers so I could take the keys from her hand. "We're going to get you home, okay?" She didn't move, and I fought the urge to punch something. I moved to the driver's door, then unlocked and opened it. I motioned Brutus inside, but he didn't move. "Come on, pal, help me out. I'm trying to get her home." The dog's head cocked to one side, and then he leapt into the cab. I let out a breath of relief. I didn't want to think about what it would have taken for me to get him into the vehicle if he hadn't wanted to obey. I set the flyer on the dash and moved back to Arden. My fingers curled around her shoulders, and I turned her to face me. "We're going to get you in the truck. Can you help me with that?" She was looking right at me, but it was as if she didn't see me at all, as if she were in some other place completely. Finally, she nodded. I guided her toward the door and helped her inside. She slid into the center seat automatically. I quickly climbed in after her and started the engine. Glancing over, I registered her still pale complexion and my hands tightened on the wheel. Maybe I should be taking her to a doctor or hospital, but all I could think about was getting her home, safely. Slamming the door, I threw the truck in reverse. I made the drive in half the time it normally took, glancing over at Arden every couple of minutes, as if she might disappear in front of my eyes, into whatever alternate reality she was looking at as she absently stared out the windshield. Because it was closer, I went to Cope's house instead of Arden's. I pulled to a stop in front of the massive structure, then eased Arden out of the vehicle, Brutus instantly following behind. It only took me a few seconds to hit the code for the door's lock and get her inside. But when we reached the living room, she wouldn't sit. She simply started shaking her head. "Talk to me." There was a pleading tone to my voice, like I was begging. But I didn't give a damn. I needed to know that Arden would be okay. She blinked a few times, a little awareness coming back.
"I froze."
"You froze?" Her hands fisted in my tee, twisting the fabric.
"All my training, and I just froze."
A sick feeling slid through me.
"What were you training for?"
Arden's gray-violet gaze fully focused and collided with mine.
"What to do in case they try to kill me again."
14. Arden. The truth slid out so easily, it was shocking, especially given the fact that it was a truth I'd guarded with my life for over 13 years. But I gave it to Link as if it were nothing. as if he had earned the right to all my secrets. And maybe he had, or perhaps there was simply something about him that made me want to lay myself bare. That in and of itself should have had me running for the hills, but it didn't. I stayed and watched as the words hit him and realization dawned. Those hazel eyes turned thunderous, the sort of stormy that threatened retribution of the highest order.
Who hurt you?
I could feel the war within him, the battle to keep his hold on me gentle and the fight to not scare me. But I wasn't frightened. Somehow his anger was a balm. I knew I shouldn't tell him. My family were the only ones I could truly trust. But I found myself speaking anyway. It was like my voice belonged to someone else, as if I were listening right along with Link. My parents were killed when I was 11, I began. I saw it. My mom, at least. She had hidden me in a secret closet, but there wasn't enough room for us both. Acid surged up my throat, burning it. The older I'd gotten, the more I recognized her sacrifice. I watched as a man taunted her, and then ordered his hired hand to kill her. All because my father was greedy, because he wanted more. I'd realized with time that my mom must have known what my dad was up to. The mastermind had known her, had called her by name, but I couldn't stop replaying the conversations of that night all those years ago in my head. How my mom had told me things would get better and dad would be home more. Either she'd known and had convinced my dad to stop taking the bribes, or he'd grown a conscience and decided to stop all on his own. But none of that changed the fact that his greed had set the series of events in motion. I let out a shaky breath, anger mixing with my fear. As if we didn't have enough. Our house was bigger than we'd ever need. His car was top of the line and his clothes were impeccable. But it wasn't enough. Confusion swept over Lincoln's face.
He stole something?
I shook my head. He was a judge. He accepted bribes. Link muttered a curse. Apparently there came a time when he wanted to stop.
And they didn't want him to,
Link surmised. No, I whispered. They didn't. So I watched from the pitch black of a hidden closet as they shot my mom in the chest. I watched her take her last breath, watched as her blood spilled out onto one of our antique rugs. I watched her life spill out. I waited, locked in the dark for hours until a neighbor saw our open door and called the police. But even then, I was too terrified to step into the light. They had to sedate me to get me out of there.
Fuck.
Link bit out, and then his arms were around me. He engulfed me in a hug that nearly drowned me, in the best way. For the first time in over a decade, I felt truly safe, as if no one could get to me because the embrace would protect me. I let all that was Link drown my senses, let that bourbon and cedar scent wrap around me and seep into my skin. He held me for a long time. So long, I thought the sun might have sunk lower in the sky, but it wasn't long enough. As he pulled back, he lifted his hands and framed my face. His palms and fingertips were calloused, a fighter's hands. And those made me feel safe, too.
Tell me they got them. Tell me those bastards are rotting in jail.
I wanted to say yes. Wanted to know I'd never have to worry about those men again. But I couldn't. One is. I swallowed hard. I only really saw the man who shot her, not the one who ordered him to. But my description led the police to the shooter. My testimony put him away. Link's thumb stroked the apple of my cheek.
So damn strong.
I wasn't, not really. I was still terrified of the dark, still held myself back from all the people in my life. But I didn't tell Link any of that. Instead, I gave him a different truth. They never found the mastermind, the one calling all the shots. The hired gun never flipped on him. And all I saw was his damn shoe. Only heard his voice taunting my mom before he killed her and said he'd find and kill me too. Link's hold on my face tightened infinitesimally.
Fucking hell.
The cops tried to put the pieces together and link him to my dad or the hired gun, but the money trails they found disappeared in Switzerland.
Hiding his tracks?
Link muttered. Yes. And he used that anonymity to try again. He didn't want to take any chances that I might have seen something more. Link released me then, as if he didn't trust himself not to hurt me somehow. He ran a hand through his hair, tugging hard on the ends of the strands.
What do you mean, try again?
He spat. I swallowed hard. They put me into foster care after my parents were killed. I only had one distant family member, and they weren't equipped to take custody of a young girl. So I lived in a house with a handful of other kids. One night, someone broke in. Apparently, they hacked CPS to find my location. Link's hands fisted as he let out a sound that resembled a snarl. The woman who ran the foster home, Mrs. Dearborn, saved my life. She must have heard something because she came out of her bedroom and surprised the masked person outside my room. No, not a person, a hitman, a hired gun, someone contracted to kill me. She screamed for me to run and got knocked unconscious as a result. But she did it anyway. Saved my life, just like my mom had. I let out a shuddering breath as my throat burned. I was so scared. I slid out my window and ran as hard and fast as I could. I didn't even have shoes on, but I pushed until I couldn't go any farther. I didn't know what to do. Tears pooled in my eyes as the memories hit me one after the other. Finally, I came to a church. My family wasn't religious, but I thought I might be safe there until morning. I hid in the back pew. I must have fallen asleep because the next thing I remember is a nun waking me up and asking if I was okay. Link stared at me, unmoving. Pain and fury splashed across his face. The police came and brought me to the station. That's when they put me into witness protection. Link's eyes flared in surprise.
Witness protection,
he echoed. They placed me far away, across the country. Even Nora and Lolly didn't know where I'd come from or what had happened to me. They just knew I was traumatized and needed them. They were so patient, never pushed, were just there, my steady rocks. I'll never be able to repay them for what they did for me. Link moved again, back to me, engulfing me in that embrace.
You're safe now.
I sensed the words were as much for him as they were for me, and I wanted to believe them, but I wasn't sure I could. The note, I croaked. Link pulled back but kept his hands on me.
You think someone knows about your past?
I know who you really are. I recited the red scrawl. He muttered a curse.
You need to call your case agent.
I don't have one, not anymore. I opted out of the program when I turned 18. Link's eyes hardened.
Why?
He gritted out. My spine stiffened. You have no idea what it's like. Endless rules of who you can tell what to, feeling like people are constantly watching you, like the small